Hare Krishna. We're reading from chapter 3 called Karma Yoga, text number 27. Please repeat. Prakrite
Kriyamanani
Gunai Karmani Sarvasha
Ahamkara Vimudha
Atma Karta
Aham
Iti
Manyate
Prakrite
Kriyamanani
Gunai karma nisarvasha
Ahamkara vimudhadma
Kartaham
iti manyate
Prakrite kriyamanani
Gunai karma nisarvasha
Ahamkara vimudhadma
Kartaham
iti manyate
Prakrite kriyamanani
Gunai karmani sarvasha
Ahamkara vimudhadma
Kartaham iti manyate
Prakrite
Oh, sorry, you want to repeat it?
Prakrite kriyamanani
Gunai karmani sarvasha
Ahamkara vimudhadma
Kartaham iti manyate Please repeat.
Prakrite
Of material nature
Kriyamanani
Being done.
Being done.
Gunai.
Gunai.
By the modes.
By the modes.
Karmani.
Karmani.
Activities.
Activities.
Sarvasha.
Sarvasha.
All kinds of.
All kinds of.
Ahamkara vimudha.
Ahamkara vimudha.
Bewildered by false ego.
Bewildered by false ego.
Atma. The spirit soul.
Spirit soul.
Karta.
Karta.
Dur.
Dur.
Aham.
Aham.
I.
I.
Iti.
Iti.
Thus.
Thus.
Manyate.
Manyate.
He thinks.
He thinks.
Translation. The spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by the three modes of material nature. Purport. Two persons, one in Krishna consciousness and the other in material consciousness, working on the same level, may appear to be working on the same platform, but there is a wide gulf of difference in their respective positions. The person in material consciousness is convinced by false ego that he is the doer of everything. He does not know that the mechanism of the body is produced by material nature, which works under the supervision of the Supreme Lord. The materialistic person has no knowledge that ultimately he is under the control of Krishna. The person in false ego takes all credit for doing everything independently, and that is the symptom of his nescience. He does not know that this gross and subtle body is the creation of material nature under the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and as such, his bodily and mental activities should be engaged in the service of Krishna, in Krishna consciousness. The ignorant man forgets that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as Rishikesh, or the master of the senses of the material body. For due to his long misuse of the senses in sense gratification, he is factually bewildered by the false ego, which makes him forget his eternal relationship with Krishna. Om Agyanati Marandasya Ganam Jana Salakya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam rupa kadamayam tadhati svapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Uta Parakamalam Sri Gurum Vaishnavamscha
Sri Rupang Sagrajatang Sagnaragnatang Vitang Tang Sajivang Sadvaitang Savadutang Parijana Setang Krishna Chaitanya Devang Sri Radha Krishna Padang Sagana Lalita Sri Vishakan Vitangsha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavanishwari Vrishabhanu Sutadevi Pranamami Hari Priye Vansha Kalpataruvyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyayavacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadhara Sivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Prakrite Kriyamanani Gunai Karmani Sarvashaha Ahamkara Vimudharma Kartaham Iti Manyate. So it's a very important verse. Kartaham Iti Manyate. Man means the mind, and karta means doer from karma, and aham is I, aham. Kartaham, here translated as false ego, I think.
Which is?
Kartaham, I am doing. So this is an, here it is, ahankara vimudhadma, that is the beginning of the second line. Like if you look at the Sanskrit, you see there's actually two lines. You see, so this is one line and this is the second line. Usually it's put in like four sentences, right? Yeah. So then you think it's four lines, but it's actually two lines. So this is the beginning of the second line, yeah. And it says ahankara vimudadma. So aham also means it's the same word as I am aham. And kara is also this, like this karta means from karma, from doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that is actually, ahankara means, you know that probably.
Mm-hmm. False ego.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, false ego. False ego. Because Krishna is explaining that he is not doing it. That is why he calls him vimuda. Like a muda means like a donkey. And the vimuda means like a really stupid person. And here, vimuda is like here, you have this word bewildered. That's actually interesting because you have also wild, you know, I'm wild. Like an animal generally is wild. And here is the word bewildered. I don't know if that's connected. But it's an interesting thing, observation. Ankara vimudadma kartaham iti manyate. So we should actually know this whole verse. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasha. So prakriti, you must have heard of it. This is the material energy.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes prakriti also means like female. Because material energy is considered female. Like we say mother nature,
mm-hmm.
like that. Prakriti kriyamanani, again this kriya, karma, kriya means doing. So gunai karmani sarvasha. So it is actually done by the prakriti, by the three modes. Sarvasha means sarva means all. Again, this karma done, activity. And the karma means activity actually. Guna by the gunas.
Mm-hmm. What is material nature? Like the name, material nature.
Yeah, guna means robe actually.
The rope.
Robe. Like sometimes you see devotees chanting japa, and then they fall asleep. Or like myself, I sometimes fall asleep during the class, actually many times. And then it's almost like a python or something is strangling you. You know, you're sort of like, you know, it's like these ropes,
like
gunas. You see, and I also notice that sometimes in the temple room when devotees chant japa, it's like a wave hits the temple room, you know. Suddenly three devotees that fall asleep or four devotees that just leave at the same time. They're thinking like, okay, I need some extra rest. This is not working for me, you know. I went to bed last night, too late or whatever. So, you know, the modes, they work like that. Like we know in the evening, it's tamagun. There's nothing you can do about it. It's there. It's like a forest fire. Mm-hmm. You can say, I'm going to ignore it. But unless you have like a fire-resistant coat, you're not really going to ignore it. Or you've got to be some yogi.
Yeah.
So the modes are there. You have to deal with it. Like if you are standing in the sea. I don't know, you ever been in Jagannath Puri?
Mm-hmm.
So there's big waves there, right? Mm-hmm. You can't really ignore those waves. I mean, you're going to get crushed. So the modes are like that. You're going to be influenced by it. In fact, Prabhupada says that as long as you have a material body, you're going to be influenced by sex desire. It's just part of the body. It's a machine. It gets agitated by these things. But if you, that is what Krishna actually is saying throughout the whole Bhagavad Gita. If you shift your attention to Krishna, then you get a higher taste. So the attraction is still there for the opposite sex, but you have a higher attraction. This is actually how it's explained, that in Vaikuntha there are so many beautiful men and women, but we're not attracted by the opposite sex because we're so much attracted to Krishna and serving Krishna. So that's the idea, that you can transcend this sex desire, which is called in spiritual...
Yeah, right.
Huh?
We're looking for Yana, right?
Right. So? Well, no.
Okay, sorry.
He doesn't pick up his phone?
Oh, we need him.
He doesn't pick up his phone?
It's not at the farm, no.
Oh, his phone.
Oh, no.
Pick it.
So,
my
question.
Yeah?
You said we can transcend it.
Yeah.
But sometimes we see that there's a guru who's a sannyas for years and years and years and years, then he decides that he wants to get married.
Yeah.
That means that he's going to thinking he's going to get more pleasure out of having this relationship with some lady than he is in his relationship with Krishna.
No, I don't know. That is a big conclusion. That is a big conclusion. I mean, my experience, if I look at my own life, it's all mixed. I don't want to get into the details because, you know, I don't want to embarrass myself, but it's mixed. So, you know, the fact that some Swami, so-called, falls down doesn't mean that his love for Srila Prabhupada or Lord Krishna is diminished. You know, it just means that, he hasn't developed so much that higher taste yet. You know?
Someone who is sannyas for years and years must have some higher taste.
Why?
He must have some higher taste to do it for so many years.
I understand what you're saying. Why? Why he must have? If he doesn't follow properly, then why he must have?
No, I mean, they follow properly for years and years, and then they change their mind.
Who has followed properly years and years?
Swamis.
Which Swami?
He's going to sannyas.
Which is consummation?
Right.
Well, then you don't say names, but my point is that, you know, you show me one person that has followed strictly and has fallen down because I haven't met him. And that's what you hear time and time again, that I have not been following strictly. Like, you know, I don't want to get too much into details, but you hear people say, I have been working too hard, I've been pushed around, and now I'm going to take some time for myself. I've been just running around. I haven't been able to really apply myself. And then at some stage it gets too late. Then it's no use anymore talking to the person like, now you have to apply yourself and it's too late. And it's difficult. It's difficult to apply ourselves. And this is, I tell you honestly, this is one of the reasons why I started doing this Bhagavad Gita class.
But they're doing classes every day.
They're giving, but are they also attending? Prabhupada says, all my initiated disciples must come to morning and evening classes. I mean, I don't know, maybe I didn't get the memo. Maybe there's another letter where Prabhupada says, no, forget about that instruction. But I never got that memo. So I'm following that instruction quite strictly. Right? At least I try to. And even if I don't, I believe in that instruction. Like I was just telling somebody, if you chant one round, and you come to that program we have, Kirtan Mela, and you're like, well, it didn't really do so much for me. You can't really expect that if you only chant one round. Like if you go to a club, and, you know, I don't know if you ever went to a club. I don't answer that. But, you know, The point is, I went to a club. I'm not ashamed to admit. And I never went to a club sober. And if I did, like by some fluke, it wasn't very nice. You know? So the point is that the club, or the whatever you call it, it's nice when you're intoxicated. Mm-hmm. So the devotees here, they're intoxicated by the holy name. And it's not that they're just chanting. They're coming, most of them, if not all of them, they're coming to the programs. And they're coming to the clans and they're chanting. All of them, I know, practically all of them, are chanting 16 rounds of japa. And this is where you get your taste from. You see, so the point is that I might not be following strictly this Bhagavad Gita class, but then I know that I don't get the result. That is my bond. It's scientific. If you don't follow strictly, then you cannot expect the result. If you chant one round, you cannot expect coming into a kirtan and then it's all blissful. It might happen, but if it doesn't happen, then we have the explanation why it didn't happen. So similarly, you know, it's not that if a swami doesn't, you know, if he's busy and he gives classes and he's not coming to other people's classes, it doesn't mean he's going to fall down. But if somebody falls down and then you backtrack, then I haven't seen anybody falling down coming to all of the classes. I haven't met that person.
Oh, you mean they're not going to class? When you say they're not following, you mean they're not going to class?
Yeah, they're not coming to every morning class and every evening class. Like I know, for instance, now I won't say his name because it's not proper, but there is one, used to be one very big guru, and he used to say, and it was too late already, he was going. And you know, it was the classic thing, some woman, you know. And then all his big disciples were gathering around him, and then they were preaching to their own guru. Now you have to stay. And then he said, I'm listening to you, I'm hearing you, but it's not registering. I have been speaking for so long, and I have not been listening. So now it's too late. I am hearing you, but I am not. It's not registering. So I am very sorry. And he left. So
he left ISKCON.
Yeah. Well, I mean, left ISKCON is a big word, but, you know, he had to give up his guru position, and it was a whole big thing. But the point is that his disciples and his friends, his well-wishers, they were preaching to him, and they were saying, but he admitted himself, I have not been listening. You know, we can study the examples. So Jadananda Maharaj made a whole study, and I've been to a seminar about sannyas.
Yeah.
And we hear it time and time again. We hear these things, that there was too much pressure. And then, of course, we're ISKCON, because he also gave the examples of other mats, and they're very strict. The men, and we were discussing it today, the men and women are very separated. And this. But the thing is, we're preaching. We are preaching, you know. And Prabhupada, he was so successful. And one of the reasons why he was so successful, because he adjusted things. He invited women and he treated them as equal. And that is the standard, actually, Prabhupada said. I don't want to get a whole discussion now, because I don't think we're ready for it yet. But I want to at least stress this point, that Prabhupada, as far as I can see by his behavior, he treated women equal. So that is the standard he said, and I think that is the standard we should follow. Sometimes he might have preached differently, and we have to consider that also. You know, we can't just ignore that. But the behavior, Prabhupada treated them equal. So we have to, I just want to state it now without getting into a whole discussion. And I want to definitely stress this point, at least today, that Prabhupada, as far as I know, from what I hear from different, he treated women equally. So we should follow that standard. My point is that makes it more difficult. Not only this women thing, but we preach to rich people, to, you know, like the opposite sex. Many gurus, they preach, they initiate people. And sometimes the initiation is a little bit too close. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the example. He didn't allow anybody even bowing down in front of it. They had to go like 25 meters or something. I don't know exactly the details. But the point is that he was very strict. So he showed the perfect example. Sometimes we get a little bit carried away. So we might maybe reconsider things a little bit. I think Kripa Moya made the same point in the lecture. that he was giving different rules about Gayatri chanting, and I think he was implying that we should try to follow these rules. Well, for instance, he said that you should chant standing up morning and noon and face to the east, but the evening ones, and it was actually also told by my initiation, he said, I don't care about the first, but the third one you must sit down, he said. So my Ritvik guru, I mean, I shouldn't say Ritvik guru, but because then people get the wrong idea. Some Iskon devotee, he did the yagya for me, and Jagat Dakamaraj was there, he initiated me, but somebody else did the yagya, so officially you called it Ritvik guru, or a priest, actually, Ritvik priest, but priest and guru, it's almost synonymous. And then, yeah, he said that to me. He said, you should chant the third Gayatri sitting down. So I didn't know about it, but not so much.
So the first and the second, you're supposed to stand up.
Yeah, I didn't know that. That's what he said.
You're supposed to stand.
Yeah.
And face the east.
Yeah. Anyway, but he was implying that we should follow these rules. And sometimes we'll get a little carried away. Like, I don't know if it probably happened, but I never did it. But like, for instance, chanting your Gayatri while driving. Or even chanting them in a car, that definitely also should not be done. Should not be done in a driving vehicle.
When I was in Bangladesh, they stopped the bus and everyone got out and did their Mecca prayers.
That's the culture.
They stopped the whole bus, long distance bus.
Yeah.
It was time for prayers.
Yeah.
They stopped the whole group traveling long distance.
Yeah.
They stopped the bus for 5 minutes. Everyone got out, put down their mats, and they faced to the east. And they started saying their prayers, and then they all got back in the bus and they carried on.
Oh, you're Muslims, you mean?
A regular bus,
Oh, Muslims?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought Iskon Devotees.
No, that's what I thought first, and then...
No, a regular bus.
Yeah, but that culture we should develop also in Iskon. You know, Prabhupada says morning, noon, and evening.
Well, it's the time they stop and they do it.
Yeah.
They do it, they're very strict, the five prayers.
Yeah, so we should also develop that culture a little bit more. We should, with some things, and I think we do develop that culture more, actually. Already, it's happening. Like, you know, there's a waiting list for sannyas. Nobody gets sannyas before 40. Unless there is some really exception. And everybody's going like, no, no.
Used to be 30, now it's 40?
Yeah, it's 40. And 40 means like the absolute minimum. That means that you have to be 35 to get on the list, and then everything has to be perfect, and then 40. But, you know, I mean...
Yeah, the anonymous one is not very old.
No, he was one of the exceptions.
But he joined when he was 14.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, he's an exception. But I'm just saying that already, because they gave sannyas to people who are 24. So some of these people, sometimes they think, I never had a life, I didn't have a choice in the matter, and then they go back. It's not good, but, you know, generally what they say is two main things. Is they had too much pressure and not enough friendship.
Yeah, I said they should travel in twos.
Yeah, but at the same time, Prabhupada also says that if you go to Guru Puja, then all your envy between your God brothers will go away. And I've seen this happen, actually. I have a lot of envy in my heart, I'm sorry to say, but I will admit to you, because I'm sitting on the Vyasa Sun. I have to be honest. And then I go to the Guru Puja, and then it dissipates. Not completely, unfortunately, but to a great extent, it definitely dissipates. Because you jump around, and you look at each other, and you smile, and you think, what are we talking about? We're God brothers. Even might be a different guru, but we're more or less brothers. Like nephews, God nephews, in Vedic culture, nephew and brother is practically the same.
Yeah.
So we're one family, and it's just small potatoes, small things. So, but again, that you have to apply yourself, because they're complaining about no friendships. But are they jumping around in the Guru Puja? Maybe not. I'm not afraid to say definitely not. If they fell down, I cannot believe they went to all the programs. But I was just saying to that person, you cannot expect to have taste for the Kirtan Melo or the Radha's Melos if you don't chant 60 rounds. It's a right to come and to enjoy yourself and eat some prasadam and sit down on a chair, but don't complain like, well, it's not really my thing or something. You can't do that, in my opinion, you know, because it's a scientific problem. You can't go to a club and then not drink anything and not participate in the whole mood and say, I didn't like the party. Yeah, well, I mean, you know, we had a great time. We were all drunk, as you know, and it was great. You never drink anything, you know. No wonder you, right? It's normal, no? So we have the same standard, but it's 180 degrees different.
Mm.
Our standard is you gotta chain 60 rounds instead of chain 16, drink 16 beers. You chain 60 rounds. And you'll experience, you've chanted 60 rounds, right?
Mm-hmm.
You'll experience it that once you hit that 16th round, then you feel empowered. You feel Krishnaized, as Prabhupada says. So, sorry, it's a little bit of a long answer, but it was a very controversial question. I hope that clears the matter, you know, because you shouldn't have any doubt. Please don't be too critical now to people that might not follow that standard. But you can bet your bottom dollar that people that do follow that standard, and there are at least a few that I know of that do follow that standard, and they don't seem to have any problems. They're steady as a rock. And just on the top of my head, you know, maybe I can name names. Maybe I shouldn't even name names because it's still a controversial topic. But on the top of my head, I can name you three gurus. Okay, there are sannyasis, but even I can even name riyasas that are also like very strict, and they're still going on strong. They have lots of taste, and you know, so I can give examples from both sides. I can give negative and positive examples. Also, in my own life, I can tell you that it's working. You know, very slowly, but it is working. And ultimately, it's kind of funny. You can't actually bloop if you keep going through the programs. Prabhupada says, if you chant 60 rounds and you follow four principles, you will never fall down. I mean, the thing is, you can't fall down if you keep following this. You just have to stick to it some other. And especially this for me personally, this chanting japa also is very important. You have to apply yourself. Anyway, now I'm convinced that it's true. And if you want to argue, then you will have to come with evidence, and we can discuss it.
No, not arguing.
No, I'm not saying you are, but I mean just in general. You know, then show me the Swami that followed all the programs, that went to every Guru Puja, went to all the classes, and then blooped. I don't think it's there. In fact, I know Swamis that follow that more or less, and they're still here. And from all, more or less all of them that went, that gradually, in the beginning they were strict, but then gradually, because of so much pressure and so many things, because it's easy to say that they were just getting too much Mahaprasada. No, it was a lot of pressure. And then you start to, it's called the seven offense. Like I also do it sometimes, I walk in with my laptop and I think I don't need to bow down because I got my laptop, it's my service. That's the seven offense. To commit sinful activities on the strength of the holy name.
Mm.
So you think, you know, I have my service, I have so much important preaching to do, so I don't have to come to the class.
Mm.
And this is how it starts. And you can do it a few times, you can cut a few corners, that's all right. But if you keep doing this, and you think actually that it's all right, that I think that is the really the worst. But that's actually, I think, where it goes wrong. Because then if you think that, and we also know that, especially from the past, like 10, 20 years ago, we know that that actually happened, that people, the gurus and the disciples were speaking like that. No, he's on this high level, he can do that. So that is actually the seventh offense. You know, Prabhupada was always very strict, even though you know, he really didn't need to follow, but he was always very strict to show the example. I'm out of time. We didn't even get to the verse. Because I want to end on time, you know, otherwise it just, like the speaker yesterday, he said, I can keep on talking, so unfortunately I'm no exception. So, you know, we should end there. Anyway, I'll just ask for questions. I would like to read the purport, but we want to keep it short and sweet. So, any more questions on the on this topic or on the purport?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, in the purport, it says the subtle body is a creation of material nature. So,
yeah.
This means the mind.
Yeah, the mind, the false ego, and the
so it means
intelligence.
The mind is a creation of material nature.
Yeah, why not? Or you think it's your own? Well, Prabhupada does say that by our desire it gets created. But it's not that you create the mind, you know that, of course. Right? I mean, it's a difficult topic, actually, and I don't have such a good grasp of it. And ultimately, it's not so important. No, because the thing is, you have a spiritual mind as well. You see? But the point is that the conditioned soul, this is my understanding, because ultimately we talk now about the fallen, because you talk about created. So my understanding is we were at Krishna, and then we're talking actually in the class, it's not different, the topic is not different. You make some offense. It's explained like the fallen with Tulsi Devi, and then with Jain Vijay, Jain, they offended the Kumaras. So you make some offense, and then you don't do the proper atonement. Or it's such a big offense that it's already too late. Like, because they cursed him. You see, and Radharani, she cursed Tulsi. Of course, Radharani's curse is so powerful that now she became even more exalted than Radharani. Because sometimes Krishna leaves Radharani, but Tulsi is always on Krishna's lotus feet. So this is the power of Radharani's curse. But that's a side point. So then you leave. And then gradually, then this explains Srila Prabhupada in the Bhagavatam, that you first become Lord Brahma, and then, I don't know if Prabhupada explains it, but different devotees explain it to me, and it's just logical. Then you're Lord Brahma, and you look down on Indra, and Indra is there with all the beautiful ladies and having parties, and then you think, that would also be interesting. And the understanding is, Prabhupada does explain that you go for the full experience, all the way down to the hawk. Actually, you want to have every single thing. So you go almost to every species, that's how it's described, and then you go up again. So that my point is that you get more and more entangled. So the consciousness of the soul, it somehow or other identifies with that matter. And so that matter is constructed by Krishna. He creates the material body and the subtle body. And in the higher planetary systems, you mainly get the subtle body. Mind, intelligence, false ego. And so some other, yeah, like the body of Brahma is intelligence. So that is like, it's like a shell, it's like a body, you know, like a machine. But it's created by Krishna. But like I said, you also have a spiritual mind. But it identifies with that material mind. It's so well constructed. Like this body, we know it's not our body. We know it's blood. It looks real, you know. It looks like it's us. It's so well done. So yeah, it's the subtle body is even more complicated. This is actually what Sariputta was trying to do. He was trying to prove that we have a mind. So we have a mind, and it's definitely material. Be careful what you think. It's like a little cloud comes out of your mind, and other people can pick it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can feel if an evil person walks in and disturbs the whole room.
Yeah.
You know, or a lusty person.
That I notice.
You know, yeah. So, and that's why it's so nice to associate with devotees, because they're purified.
So supposing an evil person walks in, what is it? How does it touch
an evil person?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, in Amsterdam, sometimes I hit that I have a sort of a sense for it, that criminal persons walk into the temple. And I immediately feel it in my stomach, you know, because I'm like a born Kshatriya. And it's like a fear, but it's like the fear for so many things that can happen, you know. It's like the adrenaline immediately starts pumping, actually, because that's what fear does. So like that. And that fear is really not what we want. It's called bhai, and we want to be abhai, or vaikunta, without fear. Fear is very low vibration. I sometimes study these, like Mayavadis, so-called Mayavadis, and they have all these lower emotions. We don't get into it so much, but it's quite interesting. And fear is one of the lower emotions, and then gradually we have to go higher to like courage, and these are like, then you get very proud, and then it goes up all the way up to liberation. So fear, they have that fear with them, because they're always looking around their shoulder, and they're also generally very aggressive. And then you get affected by that.
Mm.
And it disturbs really the whole atmosphere. And, you know, unfortunately, we're all conditioned But sometimes people say ISKCON, this, that. But ISKCON is very great. It's just that we are working with conditioned souls. We're trying to be devotees. You know, so that's why sometimes things go wrong, because we're conditioned. But devotees are very nice. As soon as you apologize, then they forgive, because they know that we're all trying. I mean, generally they forgive. Sometimes somebody might keep a grudge, but that is very exceptional. It doesn't happen often. Generally devotees, as soon as you apologize, they say, oh, it's nothing. Yeah. So, yeah, that's why it's nice to be with devotees. Okay. Anything else?
You know, you mentioned about false ego. What was it called?
Ahankar.
Ahankar, that's it. How do you... Because, you know, like, everyone has a false ego, don't they? I mean, it's very difficult to get rid of the false ego. You said we think that we are the doer. And a lot of the times, you know, even in spiritual life, a lot of times you want to do things for your own ego, you know, like even when we study or when we read or when we learn, sometimes it's to develop our understanding and knowledge so we can show off and things like that. And a lot of people, you know, it is one of the motivating factors, and Krishna even says that only a lot of people come to me for these reasons, to become fit, to gain fame. What's the best way then? What's the process of trying to control and trying to diminish this false ego that we will have?
Oh, that's a difficult question.
Because I think it's a very difficult thing, because it's such a difficult thing to get rid of.
Yeah, well, first of all, I first want to explain to you a little bit about the false ego. Mm-hmm. You know about the layers of the universe, the different layers? So every layer is 10 times bigger than the previous one. You've got earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, ego.
Mm-hmm.
So the ego layer is huge.
Right.
So this should give you an idea how big this false ego is. You know? It's very subtle. And as far as my understanding goes, that already starts in the spiritual world, but it's so subtle that you almost not notice it. Because you must have some ego. That is called, in the spiritual world, it's actually called rasa. You know? But there it's all very enjoyable. But if you deviate just a little bit and you don't come back, you don't apologize to the devotee, which is part of the rasa, then you end up where we are ending up now. And the same is in ISKCON. You can make so many offenses, and in some sense the devotees, actually not even the devotees, it's just you yourself, give yourself the intelligence that, let me just, you know, do something else. So that is one thing. And then this intelligence, my understanding is actually the key to the false ego. I mean, in one sense it's humility. And one key to humility is being thankful. And another devotee said simplicity, which is the opposite of duplicity. But I mean, ultimately, it is my understanding that lust and also ego, false ego, it really gets cut down by the knowledge. This is what we chant in the beginning, Om Agyana Timananda Sevanam. What is the exact translation? Do you know it by heart? I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. Sometimes Prabhupada also uses the sword of knowledge. So the spiritual master, and this is also spiritual master, Krishna, he ultimately needs to cut that. So the idea is that, and this is the last point I'll say, that many acharyas say, Krishna says, jnana karmadi anavritam. You have to give up jnana, karma, and yoga, and all these things. Why they stress that so much? Because it's very difficult.
Mm.
That's what you just said.
Mm.
It's very difficult to give up karma. It's more difficult to give up jnana. It's even more difficult to give up mystical power. So, but the thing is that generally it is like that.
Mm.
But in ISKCON, with Krishna consciousness, this is transcendental. So this is not really considered jnana. This is param jnana, or I don't know what is the exact saying, but this will purify your intelligence. So the more you study this, although you might become a little bit proud, it will ultimately purify you. And then also, like we spoke very lengthy, you also follow the process. And one of the very important thing of the process is that you accept a guru, and that you accept an ISKCON authority as your guide or as your authority, and then he will guide you. And I mean that's basically it. You have to accept a guru. That will also help, you know. And like I said, if you read these books, it will purify that intelligence. Oh yeah, one other thing I would like to say is that also, like, if you are a guru, then still you should generally try to take at least advice from God brothers, because this was also the complaint these sannyasis that fell down had, that they didn't have friendship. So that means they didn't have any association to check that false ego, you know, because that's what friends are for. They say, "Prabhu, you're really puffed up. You should apologize, you know, this is not good what you said to a woman or whatever," you know. So, and that you see also now, I can see the ISKCON, I can see that many of the sannyasis, they're developing, the ones that are still there, they have those friendships with other sannyasis, but also with griyastas, you know. Of course, also with women, but that we discussed, they have to maybe be a little bit careful with them. But generally, they're quite strict, I think. I'm also preaching to myself. Mm. I can also be a little bit more strict, you know. We have to be careful, but yeah, it's good to you know, associate with devotees, but it also has to be a little bit in this structure of authority, not just only friendship. You know, you have to a little bit accept also the advice, like in the case of a guru, which is exceptional. But then you should also, and then therefore it's also good if you have more than one friend. Because if three friends say that you have to take it easy, I mean, you know, if they're your friends, then you're really going to take it to heart. So, yeah, but it's the last thing to go as far as I understand. Because that's the rule, that's where everything went wrong. And the last thing, realizing, I keep talking, the last thing I say is the main disease, because this is the realization I have, and I would really like to share it with you, is to lord it over material nature, because that's what we're talking about today. And you have to learn to trust Krishna. And I am really struggling with this. You know, at the same time, it means also we have to count the amount of goodness, because Krishna says this. You know, this is very important. This might be a little bit too difficult for you to understand, because it's also difficult for me to understand. It might take too long to explain, but the simple point I want to say is that, for instance, I give you an example from my personal life, and it's kind of personal, so please, you know, I mean, I know it's on the internet, but don't abuse this knowledge. Like, sometimes I iron my clothes, and then I make it a point to iron my clothes before I do anything else, you know, but then I get late for the darshan. But that's not good. Like this morning, what happened? I again did it. I needed 5 more minutes, and I thought, I'm just gonna rise. I have to do it tonight. And I don't want to do that. That means false ego. I don't want.
Why are you ironing clothes?
Huh?
Why are you ironing?
That's another question. Don't get distracted now. But just listen to the example. So that is not good. I should just go to the darshan and just accept that, you know, I was too late to iron my clothes. Because what happened this morning, I was a little late, and then somebody asked me, "Can you check, you know, this and this door? Because, you know, somebody called and it's not sure if it's locked." So I came even more late. So I got more entangled. You see, if I would have just gone to the darshan, then they would have catched me at another time, and everything would have been fine. My day would have been more smooth. Padma Kamaj also spoke about it this morning. If you don't go to Mongol Arctic, sometimes you sit on the elephant. And so the elephant sits on you. And I was actually thinking, actually the elephant is always there. It's called Maya. So the elephant is always there. You have to mount the elephant. So the best way to mount it is when he's still sleeping and he's quiet. So, and he's calm and he's still waking up. So you mount on the elephant and you wake up the elephant. Okay, now left and right. But if the elephant is already awoke, like I was a Sangatan devotee, you go on the street at 12:11, then everybody is walking around. It's too much. But if you go on the street at 9, then you can get into it, and then at 12, you're fired up, and the books go out. You understand? So that actually ties in with this mode of goodness. So But the main thing is that you should learn, and actually going to darshan also means moral goodness. So maybe actually that is a good, that I hit something. You know, going to the mode of goodness means actually not to lord things over. Mode of passion means a little bit lording over. That's what more Brahma is doing. You know, it's a little bit. I mean, of course, Brahma is generally mode of goodness, but actually Vishnu is mode of goodness. Brahma is mode of passion. So a little bit lording it over, you know, I'm creating. So we should really give up that tendency and try to trust Krishna and also be detached. Prabhupada is very detached. Mm-hmm. Look at his life. He got a watch, he gave it away immediately. So we have to learn to trust Krishna and to just follow his order. Is that alright? Yeah?
Yeah?
Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Why do I have my clothes? Because for preaching. For preaching. You know, I'm 41 years old, I should look a little bit decent.
Do you dry them in the dryer?
Huh?
Do you dry them in the dryer?
No.
If you have a lot of flat, then you don't.
Yeah, but I have a small room, you know, it's difficult to know. No, but it's nice if you're ironing your belly, you look good. We should look good, you know, we're preaching here.
Yes. This is true.
Yeah, because you know the all the businessmen they have iron chains, so we shouldn't be lagging behind. We ultimately want to preach to the businessmen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they are running the world, huh?
Yeah.
And we are saying that we want to run the world, so we need their help.
So we should be even smarter than them.
Yeah, smarter in the sense of well dressed. Yeah. And one says we should. I mean, Prabhupada was meticulously dressed always.
Eh?
Prabhupada was meticulously dressed.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it doesn't have to always be iron, but we should just look nice. You know, and I also feel it is also part of the mother goodness, which is actually what she said to her. You know, to iron it, it keeps me in the mother goodness, or keeps me. I'm not really in the mother goodness, but a little bit it helps me to attain the mother goodness.
Are you going to the kitchen now?
Yeah.